Welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are James Jones.
I'm not supposed to talk about the draft.
And John Lindemann.
Draft beer is fantastic.
Amen. And as we announced last week, Greg is taking the week off. It is his vacation. He's watching the NFL draft.
The draft is
on. Godspeed, you Buffalo Bills. And in his place this week, we have our friend Guillaume Veillette from Negative World.
Just because you knew that I really, really don't care about the draft, isn't it?
let's make sure to work the draft into every sentence.
It made things convenient.
For the draft.
So I drafted up this show note. These show notes.
Well played, sir.
And of course, we have a retroactive coming up later in the show. We're going to talk about Moto Heroes, and I think there's a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So look forward to that as well. But first up, we've got new business, and I have been super busy this week, and outside of Moto Heroes, I haven't been able to play very much that was worth talking about. And so, well, I did finish Fez, which was an interesting experience. I used the internet, but I think you're supposed to. It's a game that I think was designed to be so difficult that no person could reasonably solve it on his own. And so I think it's designed to force you to talk with other people about how to do things.
So it's Mylon Secret Castle, basically.
You know, There are parts of it that are very reminiscent of Mylon Secret Castle.
Interesting.
Kick the 73rd block in this wall and you'll get your key.
At one point, you go down a well into the sewer and it looks straight up like Mylon Secret Castle,
awesome.
Which I got a kick out of. Yeah. Anyway, it's a very cool game. I think, you know, some of the later puzzles are kind of blisteringly, stupidly difficult to the point where, you know, at some point, I don't even understand how you would even start the puzzle. And so I didn't necessarily get that much satisfaction out of you know, reading the answer that people found and putting it in and getting the reward for it, because you know, the whole context of it is so bizarre and abstract that I couldn't even really grasp it. I just said, okay, fine, I just want to, you know, max out the game and move on to something else. But most of the stuff up before that, even if I didn't get it on my own, I kind of saw it and saw how to solve it and said, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I like that. And a lot of it I could solve on my own, especially like once I sort of got over a little bit of a hump, you know, maybe got a little bit of a boost from the internet and said, oh, okay, now I see how these things fit together and what they mean. And then I could go off and do a lot, you know, and solve several puzzles on my own using that knowledge and kind of working around it, and then go back when I got stuck again. So, you know, ultimately it's the same way I've beaten a lot of other games that I gotten frustrated with, which is go to GameFAQs. And yet this time it feels different. It feels like it was more intended to be this way. And the kind of help that I got from GameFAQs wasn't just reading a guide. It was reading the message boards and seeing the conversations people were having about it and you know, watching the process as they solve these things. So it was still pretty cool. Still pretty cool.
You've played Braid, right?
Yes.
So did you play it the same way? And like, how do the puzzles compare?
Well, the thing about Braid is you're not really going to be able to solve most of the puzzles in Braid by reading a fact. You're going to have to watch a video.
Right.
And I did do that for some things in Braid. And again, it was a similar thing where in some cases I watched the solution to one puzzle and it kind of, you know, ruined that puzzle for me because now I just, you know, literally knew how to do it just because I saw someone else do it. But that gave me ideas on how to solve other things. And so that kind of...
It drafted him an answer for some other puzzles. That's a word.
Yeah. So Braid was a somewhat similar process for me, but, Fez is a much more literal game, and thankfully it's also just not as far up its own ass in terms of the writing in Braid. I find pretty infuriating. There's a lot of things I like about Braid, but I like Fez overall much better. Fez is, for my money, just a more intelligent game, and it assumes that its players are more intelligent, and the things that it asks you to do are, although completely nuts a lot of times, are logical at least, and ultimately is just more satisfying. And there's also just a lot more to it. It's a bigger game, and I think there was a lot more time and effort put into it. So I prefer Fez over Braid. for sure. So anyway, I didn't want to talk about that much, but mainly this week I figured I would just share some reactions to Nintendo Direct and get the input from you guys as well. So this is one of those things, as of, I think, recording last week, we didn't even know this was going to happen.
Yeah, so this got announced about, I want to say, a day before it actually happened.
And I guess NOA just kind of tweeted things.
Yeah, NOA tweeted things during the Japan event.
It's a weird way to announce a bunch of games.
Well, so. to be fair, in terms of announcements, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, Nintendo has this really sick way of making you watch trailers for games you've already seen trailers for.
Yeah, and there was some more stuff out of Japan that is probably going to stay in Japan, so I didn't really find any of that stuff too interesting and didn't really want to talk about it.
We got to see a 2-minute trailer of that Namco Sega Bandai game, and yet I still know nothing the fuck about it.
It's a strategy RPG with tons of characters from 3 different publishers. It sounds like a total mess. I don't give a shit about that game. So
I care insofar as, like, what the F are they really doing with this and why?
You know, from the very beginning, I said that's going to be like a Super Robot Taizen project, and it is. It's like, let's take a very generic gameplay template and throw as many characters as possible into it. I don't think it's actually going to be an interesting game.
It might be interesting in the sense that they had Resident Evil characters that they've animated up and they were like shooting fireballs out of their hand, which is amazing and would make Resident Evil so much easier. Zombie, fuck you, fireball! Take that.
Taking a page out of Mario. Well, speaking of Mario, we got an announcement for New Super Mario Bros. 2. And this is a game that we all kind of expected. We knew that they were announcing at some point this year a new 2D Mario, that it would be for 3DS. And considering New Super Mario Bros. On DS sold about 1 billion copies worldwide,
give or take,
I was not at all surprised by this. I'm also not at all excited about it.
No.
And I think it's really sad. It's I've reached this point where Mario is a franchise now. Even Mario platformers, even if you limit it to just that, not including the sports games and the party games and stuff. But Mario as a franchise is very hot and cold for me. And New Super Mario Bros. In particular is a subset of the series that I've enjoyed both of the games so far. But my problem with it is this. You know, when the first one came out, we were like, oh, awesome, finally a brand new 2D Mario game, the first one in over 10 years. You know, everybody was excited about it. It came out, and it turns out that, you know, there were mainly the tiny Mario thing. That was interesting. That played differently, and it opened up new kinds, right, of level design, and it was challenging. And it opened up, you know, different exits for stages based on if you could beat it while you were tiny. That was really cool. Almost everything else about that game I felt was pretty flat. Mostly remixed content from previous games, and
well, it was a remix game, basically,
yeah. And then the Wii game is even more so.
It is entirely a remix, except for the multiplayer.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of power ups like the penguin suit, but ultimately they don't really change how you play the game that much. And almost all of the level designs and the features that they put into the levels are, you've seen it in other Mario games. And it's like, you know, I can understand one remix game being kind of like this tribute, this loving tribute to the Mario series,
right,
and bringing back all these characters and elements and, you know, kinds of stages that you love from previous games. But now this is the third one of these, and there's going to be a fourth one on Wii U probably at launch.
Yep.
So I'm just kind of sick of it. Yep. Like, I mean, back in the 90s, even in the 80s, but certainly in the 90s, the reason we got excited for new Mario platformers is because they were all totally different from each other.
Yeah, and they were spaced out, so they felt like an event, right?
Yeah, but even then, I mean, you know, every new Mario game that came out back then in Nintendo and Super Nintendo, each one introduced probably 100 new elements, if not 1,000 new elements. So look at Super Mario World. It is unrecognizable versus the previous games. Totally new world, different characters, different kinds of levels, different kinds of platforms.
Well, I would say World is not as good an example as 3 is, because I would say World cribs quite a bit from that. I'd say 3 is,
yeah,
a freaking revelation. I mean, compare
sure.
I would agree with that.
Compare 3 to 2. I mean, it's
unbelievable. I think they both are. And my problem with New Super Mario Bros. 2, with what little we've seen of it, admittedly, it's like 5 screenshots or something, but yeah, I don't think there's a single thing in any of those screenshots that we haven't seen in a previous Mario game. And if you don't have new ideas, don't make a new game.
The only thing we haven't seen is this weird golden enemies and golden Mario thing. Besides that, yeah, it's
Sure. I mean, look, there will be a couple of new power-ups, I have no doubt, and they'll probably be neat to run around with. But that is not enough basis to make a new game.
I think a lot of the reason why people aren't really hyped for new Super Mario Bros. 2 is because the style is the same, right? But I think as long as the ideas for the levels are different and are new, then it could be a lot of fun, right? There were
that would be wonderful.
It would be, and like I mean, but you said that
I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, but the Wii version you said was like a remix of a remix, but it did have standout levels, like for instance, like a platform that would sink if there were too many enemies on it, or you know, platforms made out of ice that would melt under your fireballs, but you needed your fireballs to access certain hidden areas, or you know, like ideas like that, like fireballs that light up your path. You know, there were a lot of cool levels in that game.
I don't disagree whatsoever, but it remains that it feels like it's just pieces of things they've already done, kind of put together in a different order. It feels like something like it feels like a fan game, but it's really not new. It's not Nintendo new. It's not what we want from them, especially with Mario. And I just feel like it's being commoditized at this point. And, you know, when I look at New Super Mario Bros. 2, I don't see a game that some young, talented director within Nintendo EAD felt really passionate that this is the game he really wanted to make and he's going to, you know, introduce the world to some new ideas. This feels like something they have to put on there to appease their investors.
Fair enough. We'll probably find out that it was made by Artoon or something.
I will end you if that's true.
Like with Galaxy 2 when that was announced, I remember a couple years ago. And basically the way they described the genesis of that project is that the guys who made Galaxy had so many ideas they couldn't fit it into the game, and they just spilled out and ended up kind of filling up a whole other game. And you know what? Based on the sales of the first Galaxy, I believe that story, because I don't think someone up in the top brass at Nintendo
"We need another one of these,"
said, "Damn it, we need another Mario Galaxy." I don't really think that came into the picture. I think they looked at the numbers and said, "Okay, well, it sold well enough. You can make another one." But that game exists because someone really wanted to make it, and someone had lots and lots and lots of ideas that they wanted to stick into that game. I just don't get the sense from New Super Mario Bros. 2 and what they showed at E3 last year, which is maybe unfair because that was not even technically a demo. It was an experience. We don't know that much about it. You know, it may take advantage of all kinds of crazy features of Wii U that we don't even know about yet. It might be a lot more different from the Wii game than this is from the DS game, but I doubt it.
You know, I'd
like to be proven wrong here in a couple of months from now.
This game, New Super Mario Bros. 2, absolutely lives and dies by if it has online play.
Yeah.
And I don't believe it does. Like, if they say at E3, "Oh yeah, and this shit's online," I'll be like, all right.
And then you can get it.
You got me. But if they're just like, "Yeah, it's just more levels," I'm like, "No, I don't want that."
Well, you know, the first one on DS had a really fun multiplayer mode. It was shallow, and there was only like, I don't know, two or three different levels you could play on.
Right.
But it was really fun, and it was probably the inspiration for the Wii game's four-player mode, which was definitely, you know, obviously integrated into the entire game, and it was a lot better. But, you know, I think it needs to have that feature, but I think having that alone is really not going to sell it on me. I'd like to see some new original creative content.
Sure.
Not just modes. You can't add modes to Mario and make me want it. I'd like a new experience here, and I just, I'm cynical, and I'm sad. I don't want to be cynical about a new Mario game being announced. I should be a lot more enthusiastic than I am, but I think this is where Nintendo has led me.
I remember people being more cynical about Super Mario 3D Land when they first saw it, right? Like, we saw the screenshots, and no one seemed to be really that impressed.
I was happy.
What I recall is that only last E3, when people actually played it, like, suddenly the hype.
It was, you know, it's even funny, because I think last E3, some people played it and went like, I don't know about this game.
That was me.
For me, 3D Land just seemed much more exciting because the Galaxy people were making it, but it wasn't a Galaxy game. They were making something else. And
right.
It's got one foot in the past and one foot in the way past. And I'm okay with that kind of time bending that it's got going on. I would agree. 3D Land doesn't really step into the future very much. It doesn't advance.
No, but ultimately what I liked about it is maybe because it is a hybrid, it felt different than any Mario game I'd played before. And what's surprising about it is it felt a lot more different than I was expecting. It felt more different than it looked.
You see, and that's the thing. I mean, I went into it and I wasn't really too – I was like, I think it'll be okay. But then I wound up liking it a lot more than I thought I would because it was so unique.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not saying it's easy to nail that formula every time you make a Mario game, but maybe don't make a Mario game so often.
Like, I understand this game will make a lot of money for the 3DS. It just will.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be a big game for them. It's coming out in August.
I'll probably buy it.
I will. And the fact it's coming out.
I definitely will.
John's going to buy it and not play
it.
No,
I will.
To quickly go through a couple other announcements from Nintendo Direct, there was a 3DS firmware update, which is already out. You should already have it. So the 3DS update allows you to make folders on the home screen, which is quite useful.
Especially if you're like our staff who has every Game Boy game on the Virtual Console service.
Yeah, well, with all the Ambassador stuff, I mean, my home screen was a complete mess. So it's a lot cleaner now. It's a lot nicer looking. But and then it sort of revamped the eShop a little bit and allowed them to show more content on there, which is probably a really good idea. I mean, I know a lot of people complain about the DSi shop.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, you have no idea.
It showed so little content at any given time.
Two icons.
Well, eShop was already an improvement on that. Now they've actually upgraded to show even more.
When I was growing up, I've been on the internet so long, I browsed the internet with a text-based browser, and that was how I equate the DSi compared to the eShop. It's like browsing the internet by command line.
Wow. But then probably the biggest thing is that it's going to allow retail games to be patched. It's not clear whether the game would have already had to have had some kind of hooks built into it to allow it to be patched or how they're exactly going to do it, but apparently when you... as of sometime in the middle of May, there's going to be a patch for Mario Kart 7 that will fix the Makawuhu shortcut glitch. And I guess that will automatically be downloaded when you go to play the game online. So it will be required to get the patch when you go online, which is that is the correct way to do it. So I'm glad that they're doing it that way.
Kid Icarus is getting some kind of content as well. It looked like it was mostly just levely stuff and some multiplayer tweaking.
Okay. We also found out, I don't think this was actually at Nintendo Direct. It seemed like it came out sort of the day after, but, new Play Control Pikmin 2 is going to be released in America. This is the strangest.
It's just 3 years late. F it. Let's go.
Yeah. 3 years after the European and Japanese release of the Wii version of Pikmin 2, it is finally coming to America. I don't think anyone could have possibly predicted this, but... it makes some kind of sense because they obviously are trying to sort of fill in a summer gap in the Wii lineup. And moreover, I think they're trying to prepare everyone for the new Pikmin that's coming to Wii U. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get it. I don't understand why they never released it in the first place, but I'm glad it's coming out now. And Pikmin 2 is a great game. And, you know, if you've never played it before, I'm sure the Wii version is very good. So you should check it out. I mean, this is, you know, kind of... it's weird because I always think, yeah, I was never really interested in the new Play Control stuff, but I did buy Metroid Prime Trilogy, which is basically new Play Control, Metroid Prime 1 and 2 packaged with Prime 3. So I do have some of those, and they're really good. I mean, they're really good. So I'm sure the Pikmin games are fine, too. And yeah, it's pretty cool. Pikmin 2 is a great game, and not enough people ever played it. So
the value of that game just crashed on the market. So, The other game that got announced is the 20th anniversary Kirby's ROM on a disc.
Well, you say that, but hang on.
We don't know what's in it, to be honest.
By necessity, the Kirby 20th anniversary collection, which is for Wii, it's actually a new Wii game announced. This is
kind
big.
Of.
But the key difference between this and the horrible Mario All-Stars thing from a couple years ago is that there is no Kirby All-Stars, right?
No, there isn't.
Mario All-Stars was literally... a ROM, the singular Super Nintendo game ROM on a disc.
And not even good version, not even the Plus World one, just the original.
Right. There's no such thing for Kirby.
Nope.
So at the very least, they're going to have to design an interface, and these games are probably going to be pulled from a variety of different platforms, so they're going to have multiple emulators running all this stuff, and... It's very much up in the air what games are going to be included.
Yep.
Whereas with Mario, it was kind of a foregone conclusion because, you know, All-Stars had been around for 20 years.
Yes.
So this is, to me, just, you know, by default, a more interesting project. Now, I'm not the biggest Kirby fan in the world, but there are a number of Kirby games I really like, some that I would have never really played that I would like to play. So they have a chance to make this really enticing.
Are these games all on the VC already?
That is not necessarily confirmed.
It will be very interesting to see if these games deliberately avoid games that are actually on the Virtual Console, but I think most of them are anyway, so that might be impossible.
I can't really think of any except for the Star Stacker version for the SNES.
Baller. That's it.
There's Kirby Air Ride.
Well, yeah, sure. GameCube games.
There's Kirby Air Ride. There's all the handheld games, which...
Yeah, I don't think Air Ride's going to be on... I mean, it'd be cool if it was.
It should be. Fucking should be.
Press A to win / not win.
That's a Sakurai game. I have never really played it. I played a demo at E3 one year, but I would love to actually give that game a shot.
Yeah, a lot of people have a lot of praise for the whatever city mode is called. The
weird multiplayer, like third-person shooter mode that Kid Icarus is blatantly inspired by.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of games they could pull out. From. I mean, it could be, and there could be some tilt and tumble in there with the Wii remote.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, depending on how much work they want to do here, this could be a really cool box set.
Exactly.
Or
that's the thing. Like,
depressing.
If it's super lazy, forget it. I'm not interested. But if they really like pull together some really cool eclectic Kirby games, of which there are many to choose from.
Oh yeah, there's stuff like what was it? The Satellaview Kirby sports games. They're mental, and like I've watched people play them. They're insane.
I've never even heard of them.
It's called Kirby's Toy Box. Is the series?
If the disc is really just the ROMs that I've already bought on the VC, the one thing that would make me buy that disc is, you know, I think the same company that made the Game Gear emulator for the 3DS made those Sega Ages collections that were only in Japan,
right?
And that are supposed to pay, you know, a lot of. Care and attention to these old classics and have several different versions of these different games. So what if those guys were in charge of making a Kirby anthology?
I mean, I would still want to see what they did. I want to see the end product before I'm in, if that makes sense. I'll pay attention and see what they did with it. I mean, they could go real crazy and throw like episodes of the Kirby show on there and just go nuts with it, but
yeah, there could be a lot of bonus content if they do it right. If they don't do it like they did with Mario. So, let's hope. Let's hope. All right, so James, what's your new business this week?
So, I'm going to speak a bit more extensively now that I've gotten deeper into the world that is Tingle's Rupee Land.
You mean freshly picked Tingle's Rosy Rupee Land?
It's always fresh. It's always fresh in Tingle's Land. To me, what's really interesting about this game is that A, it still looks really good because it's all sprite animated. But B, is that I didn't realize when I spoke last week, because I wasn't that far into the game, how much of a send-up of the Zelda franchise this game really is. And I don't just mean in that it's using references from the Zelda franchise to make jokes. I mean, even the Zelda gameplay of the 2D Zeldas is being a bit skewered here. This game plays a lot like a 2D Zelda with just a completely whack-ass combat system. Or non-combat system, I guess is the best way of putting it. I mean, there's dungeons, there's puzzles, there's an overworld map that moves just like Zelda maps. You go and it scrolls the whole screen over and then you keep walking. There's things to find on the map. There's exploration to do. You have to solve puzzles to get deeper into the game. It is a Zelda game. It's just a Zelda game with pretty short dungeons and just complete and utter chaos in the game world. And to me, it's the best parody / Zelda clone I've ever seen. It really is kind of a shame that it never came to America, because I really think hardcore 2D Zelda fans would find this game to be absolutely enthralling. Now, granted, the rupee system is bullshit.
It is. I'm really surprised to hear you say so much good about the game, because I didn't get very far into it, but it felt like playing The Price is Right on an alien planet.
How much is a shovel worth? I don't know. Fuck you. I don't know how much it's worth.
Well, in rupees, I mean, like, what the hell?
How much is lunch in rupees? I don't know. You have to pay $80 to the cook before, or 80 rupees to the cook before he'll tell you what the menu is.
Yeah, so how it works is that if you don't pay enough, you don't get the item, and you lose your rupees. And if you pay too much, well, you lose rupees as well. So what the hell? Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, well, now you can just go online and see what the cost of everything is. The shovel I mentioned, you can buy a shovel in this game, because there are a bunch of Zelda items that show up in the game. One of them is the shovel. And I way underpaid on the shovel. It turns out it's like 800 rupees. And I gave him like 400, so Freddie Mercury is selling me his shovel. And whenever you do these transactions, it shows like a third of your face on the right-hand side of the screen and a third of their face on the left, and like this tense screen of colors. And then it either goes red and everybody looks sad, or green and everybody looks excited if you've paid enough, essentially. And, like, I gave him 400 rupees, and I only had, like, 80 left, which, also, for reference, rupees are your health. So you're paying for stuff with your health. And he said, nope, that's not enough. And I'm like, shit, I don't even have enough rupees to get home. I'm screwed. So I had to use the warp to go home. I'm like, wait, I'm just not going to save, and I'll go back. So I went and I played it over again. Ended up looking up how much it was. It was 800 rupees. So I was way off. But sometimes looking it up is probably just get through that frustration. It doesn't punish you so bad on hiring allies because they cost so much money. It would just be evil. But you lose, like, a commission on it. So, like, you have to pay a $100 commission before you can bid. Or 100 rupee commission, rather. That part of the game is sort of this delightfully weird thing that can be kind of annoying sometimes. And sometimes you just feel like, yeah, nailed it. Or did I get a good... It's like bidding on a hotel on Priceline. I mean, it's crazy. But you don't know if you got a good deal or if you really just got taken.
Yeah, but like if your health is your rupees and you pay for everything with rupees, like how do you dig yourself out of that hole when you're too low in health to go make money?
So there's usually ways you can make money outside of the game. The crafting system, which you could do in Tingle's house. Like I can make 45 rupees per bottle, and I've got 7 bottles relatively quickly. So, I mean, it takes a little while to march in and out of town with my bottles of orange juice. But I could sell them for some money, and then eventually I'll have, you know, 300, 400 rupees. And that's plenty for most things. I mean, I beat a boss with 80 rupees at one point. So it's not so bad. If you've hired a hero to work with you, you can just try to avoid combat and let them take the beating. But, I mean, it can be a little taxing sometimes. Like, I'm really short on money. I mean, because you're not really going to make a lot of money in combat. Combat, it's mostly a zero-sum game, if you're lucky. You know, the amount of health you lose is roughly commensurate with the amount you earn from the battle. Instead, what you want to do is you want to try to do the quests to get money. A lot of the quests can result in the screen where you're in the opposite position of how much do you want to ask for, and if you ask for too much, you don't get anything. Or if you don't ask for enough, you just don't get as much as you could get out of the whole transaction. It's like, I saved your kid and you won't give me 800 rupees? You go to hell. I want to put your kid back in the tree. But like, it's actually really funny if you save someone's family member and then they get upset when you ask for too much rupees. She's like, what? I'd hate you.
That's why you negotiate these things up front.
That's right. That's the way you rescue family members. Just I speak from experience.
There you go. It's a neat Zelda parody, and some of the boss battles are actually really, really good. I mean, like, surprisingly.
Wait, how do you fight a boss battle?
So, it depends on the boss. Some of them are like, you have to dodge his attacks. There was one where it was a giant pirate skeleton who's going to turn you into a pirate skeleton because, quote, you have potential.
So oh, does he ever.
You're dodging his fireballs and his sword constantly. And then when you get the chance, you jump on his head. It's by tapping on him. It's very weird. So the first boss battle is actually really interesting. So Tingle inflates his balloon, which he's just gained. Like, so this is like the progression of the Tingle character. And he picks up bomb flowers and drops them on the boss while your ally keeps his minions at bay. It's really weird. I mean, the boss battles are... They're different and they're neat and there's some level of puzzle solving like Zelda boss battles. It really does feel like a Zelda game, which I'm really impressed by considering it's really more of a mercantilism game / prostitution. But, you know, it is what it is. It's neat and I really wish Nintendo had brought it over to America. I think it would have had a niche audience, but I think those people would have appreciated it.
But, I mean, luckily it sounds like it's available for very low prices if you want to import it.
There's
and of course,
apparently a warehouse full of them in the UK.
Right. And, of course, you know, DS is not region locked, so.
It's cool. I mean, it's, you know, I bought it for £7, which is like $12. And yeah. It's worth that.
Nice. All right. So, John, why don't you tell us what you've been playing this week?
I haven't had too much time, but I did manage to get into, strictly out of curiosity, of course. I did manage to get into the Diablo 3 open beta, I'm a complete Diablo noob.
You are the envy of millions of people, right?
Well, millions of people. They had 300,000 people online, I guess, at one point. It was a stress test. That's why they opened it up to everybody, and it's now back to closed beta again. So I was one of the unwashed masses that got in there. But yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much a Diablo noob, which is...
Yeah, me too.
Is a lot of people that, you know, I mean... People love Diablo 2 so much, and I feel like when I tell them, you know, I'm playing the third one, they're like, oh, well, did you play D2? And I'm like, no. And they're like, what? Like, are you from this planet? Because so many people played that game, but I just completely skipped it. You know, and then when it came out, I wasn't really much of a PC gamer at all. So, you know, it just wasn't my deal. But yeah, so I've always been curious about the franchise. You know, to me, it just looked like a whole bunch of clicking a lot of the time. And, you know, that kind of holds true for Diablo 3. I mean, I don't think Diablo 3 strays very much from the rest of the franchise at all, really. I mean, I'm sure Diablo fanboys would probably beg to differ.
Oh, you've probably just been had like a level 3 fireball cast at your head.
But yeah, so Diablo 3, I mean, it starts you off, you know, and it's, you know, spooky world of, you know, demons and everything. And I guess some star has fallen and, you know, it's the end of times, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of gameplay, you know, it's what I like about it and what I think is one of the strengths of you know, Blizzard's games overall is that they have a very sort of Nintendo-like mantra of their games are easy to learn, but there's a lot of depth to them. So you can get into them really quick, but to actually master them, it takes quite a long time. And Diablo 3 is very similar, where pretty much at the start of the game, you're told that you have two attacks. One is mapped to your left mouse button. One is mapped to your right mouse button. And your job is to kill monsters and go. You know, you're told a story as you go through. I think the game's story is also one of its big strengths. Same thing with many other Blizzard games. Everything is voice acted, so it's very well done, very high production values.
Yeah, this game has been in development forever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, announced it, like, what, 2 years ago at this point? I mean...
Yeah, but yeah, so, you know, it's pretty good. It runs like crap on my machine, so I was thinking... I was actually glad they had it because I wanted to see how it ran on my machine, whether or not I could really play it. And it actually is playable. Like I can play it, which actually impressed me. I had to turn everything down to low because my computer sucks, but it was actually playable, tolerable. Like I didn't even think it would be tolerable, but it actually was tolerable, which impressed me. But yeah, so you know, it's in terms of moving around, you just click on a spot, you know, and you walk over to it. But I mean, the real thing with it is loot, you know, what kind of cool armor you can get. A lot of cool stuff. Like, I mean, you can get some really rare armor dropped for you right out of the gate, you know, so things like that happen. So it kind of really, it really sucks you in terms of, you know, changing your character around, getting new types of armor, getting, you know, a new fancy sword or something like that.
So, John, I have a couple questions for you because I'm also a noob to the Diablo franchise. I really only barely played the original Diablo, and that was on PS1.
Yeah.
So let's just chalk that up to never having happened.
Yep.
I'm a little bit interested in Diablo 3 because I feel, you know, I do have a good computer now for gaming and I'm kind of curious about it and kind of want to see what everybody's so obsessed with. And also in the meantime, I've played Torchlight and that was a couple years ago and Torchlight, you know, I played it on my new netbook at the time and it ran so badly.
Yeah.
I think the final boss was running at about 2 frames per second when I finally killed him. And I enjoyed Torchlight enough. Ultimately, it was something I kind of killed time with on airplanes. Like, I didn't love it, but it was kind of addictive in its own, you know, really stupid way.
Yeah.
But I guess my issue with Torchlight was, number one, the combat was not that satisfying a lot of times. Like, you didn't really get it, like, the good crunchy feeling of when you kill an enemy.
Yeah.
Like, you did something cool and that you did it well. And then the other thing was I felt like the interface for managing the inventory was clunky.
Yeah.
There was too much of that. Like you couldn't really tell what anything was until you opened up a bunch of menus. And even then it was sometimes difficult to tell whether you would actually want to throw that away or keep it or sell it or equip it.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of Blizzard's strengths, and you know, something that they're really good at is making interfaces. And also the fact that they've effectively had, you know, World of Warcraft sitting there for 7 years, effectively just being a sandbox of getting user feedback on how to design interfaces. You know, there's parts of that game where they've done a do-over 3 times over, you know, on some areas of the game, you know, just because people didn't like how the interface was designed. So Diablo really, really shows that. I mean, the interfaces, that's something that struck me right out of the gate is like, wow, it's like really, really simple. You know, if you get an item, your little inventory button lights up and you click on it, and it opens up your inventory, which is kind of like an RE style sort of like box with squares that you can fill up. And, you know, some items take up 4 squares, some take up 2. So you kind of,
oh, cool.
So you sort of slot them in. So that's very easy to, it's very easy to gauge when you have, you know, how much room you have. Right. And also, So then you open up your inventory box and all of your new items that you haven't looked at since the last time you opened your inventory are all flashing. So
oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it's just really, really intuitive. It's especially helpful because you can look in there. All of the items, you know, like purple items are items that have, you know, like magic spells on them or plus five or like they're enchanted or something. So they're color-coded as well. So it's really quick to just go through all the interfaces. They're just really, really well designed. The map is really well placed. You know, and it shows you exactly where you've been. It shows you like notable kind of areas. Like if, say, if you have to, you know, go down into the basement of a house and it's sort of a separate little area. Like
to kill some rats, perhaps?
Yes. Yes. you know, like that's marked on the map. And if you forget what it is, well, you just mouse over that icon on the map and it tells you exactly what that is. Really, it's I can see people getting into it very, very easily that haven't played it, just because it's a concept that's easy to grasp and everything just kind of makes sense. It's just very, it's a very well designed game.
And it's coming out really soon.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I think it's coming out like May 15th. So I think I'd say if you haven't played it before, I mean, I'd say, you know, maybe you can get it on sale or something.
Not from Blizzard. Well, and they're going to sell it directly. So like you're going to log into Battle.net and buy it. You know, if you want to download it, if you want to buy it digitally, you will buy it directly from Blizzard and they will not have a sale on it ever.
But I think you would definitely like Diablo 3, Johnny. I think if you picked it up, you'd be pretty impressed with it.
Okay, well, let's wrap up new business with Guillaume.
Yay. I'm sorry. Every time I come here, like I talk about old crap that no one cares about. That's because I probably, you know, like I like my downloadable games, but I've bought too many of them over the years, and I have a backlog, and so now I'm playing through it, and you guys have to suffer.
Well, let me ask, do you think anybody really cares about NHL 94? Probably
no.
Not.
Good point.
People who made that game don't care about it.
So I've been playing Mario's Picross. That was actually, like, I didn't buy that one. I got it through Club Nintendo. It was one of their games that they were giving away with their coins. And, I was never going to buy it originally, but, then I thought, well, you know, it's worth fake money to have Picross on the go, always on your 3DS. And since Nintendo of America doesn't seem to want to localize Picross E or whatever it's called, the eShop version, that, you know, like Mario's Picross will have to do. The problem is I've played that game before, and so I find myself doing the same easy puzzles to get to the actually good ones, the tough ones, the fun ones. And so you've got at least 64 puzzles to go of just mindless counting before you can get to the ones that actually demand some reflection, some deduction.
So are you complaining about the like unlock structure that it forces you to play the easy stuff before you get to the good stuff?
That is what I'm complaining about. And yeah, like that's just one of the game's problems. Like it doesn't really let go of your hand for way too long, but also the fact that it's black and white and a Game Boy game, that means that the emulation makes the screen a little bit more tiny than the 3DS screen. And so I've been playing that on the go for a change. Usually I play my portables at home, but I was playing this on the train, and I had to hold my 3DS way closer to my face than I'm comfortable with in public. And yeah, I looked like an idiot, but I was just trying to see what I was doing. It was harder than it should have been to just like count the different ones and to see exactly where my cursor is and all of that stuff. And also, like the black and white thing, that means that the objects that you are drawing are a little bit tougher to identify than when they're in color. And so I swear, like, that did not look like a pair of oranges. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've got this game too, and I acquired it through the same means as you.
Theft.
And I haven't really spent much time with it because I started playing it and I thought, the interface really is not very good.
No.
You know, which is understandable for a 20-year-old Game Boy game, but, you know, and I haven't played a lot of 2D Picross, but after having played a lot of Picross 3D, I just didn't have much patience for it. I seem to remember the music was really annoying too. So.
Oh yeah, I turned it off. That's for sure. Yeah. And yeah, like the DS version brought a lot of small enhancements that I really miss in this version. For instance, they would gray out lines that you had completed. So, but this one doesn't do that. Also, I don't know if it's my 3DS that's busted or if the controls are really poorly done in the Game Boy version, but I find myself sometimes like tapping left or right on the D-pad and the cursor won't move and then I make a mistake. Or I'm holding the B button, but maybe I'm not holding it down hard enough, and sometimes in the middle of it, it just decides, okay, what? I'm just going to lose the signal and I'm going to pretend that you've pressed the B button twice, and then I end up like erasing a series of crosses that I had made. Like it's like the controls are really more touchy than I would like.
Right.
Still, I'm kind of glad I have a version of Picross for, you know, always on me, but it could be better.
Right.
Other than that, you know, like following PAX and following like having my ass handed back to me over and over again in Brawl, I've decided next time I'm meeting up with other Nintendo nerds, I'm going to be good at this game.
Same thing like me with NHL. It's like, I forget it. I was humbled.
It's probably, you know, futile because I don't have a lot of experience with this franchise at all. Like, I know that people went nuts with the Melee on the GameCube, but I rented that game twice and I played the single player only.
Oh, dear.
And I never bought it because I played the single player only. So right, I never really knew what was so good about this franchise. And then I bought Brawl, but I played through Subspace Emissary. Again, like, I shelved it after that. I was like, well, you know, maybe this is not for me. But yeah, I've been playing that, and I don't really have that much to say that you haven't said in your episode 104, which I've been listening for some reason.
Because it's right after the apocalypse, so.
That's the corrections, isn't
it? It's always good to see how society rebuilds after a disaster.
Yeah, I was listening to 104 hoping that there would be more of a shitstorm from Johnny, but...
What, the 15 minutes of corrections wasn't significant enough?
Yeah, I was expecting more of him trying to shame you.
Well, obviously after that episode, shame was irrelevant, so...
That's a good point. But yeah, like, my general impressions is that this game is really not fun when you're playing on your own. And I've been playing with a couple of friends who are not experienced with Super Smash Bros. Either. And the same points that you guys raised back then still stand. Like, the game is not that accessible for people who are only casual gamers and don't really... You know, like, it is true that the screen is hard to read. And that, especially when the stages are zoomed out and like everyone is super tiny, like you can barely see your character, much less what he's doing.
The best solution to that is to go to Final Destination and turn off all items.
Get off!
I'm kind of serious about it. If you're trying to get someone used to being able to locate their character and just, you know, get used to the way the game feels
and be bored.
I agree. That's a boring way to play it, but at least you're taking out some of the variables at that point, and then maybe you can slowly introduce them, you know, or maybe you should just stay away from New Pork City, which I don't care how much Smash Brothers you played. It's just hard to find your dude on that. I mean, that level is just so big that it's hard to keep up and figure out, like, am I close enough for them for this attack to work? It's hard to tell because you're zoomed out so much, you know?
Yeah.
So I think maybe you just want to be more selective as to the levels that you play on and until everyone gets
used
to it.
Old Pork City was so much better anyway.
Sometimes known as Hamsterdam.
Awful.
End the show right now.
Yeah, for someone who hasn't played, it's, you know, when it starts zooming in, zooming out, and you have four players going at it, it gets pretty tough. They'll get lost and just completely intimidated.
Yeah, two players is a good way to train up. And, you know, and then once you start adding three and four players, it gets exponentially crazier. So you have to maybe do that slowly.
Yeah, well, actually, I was told that you can slow down the game. So maybe I'll try that next time. Fiddle with the options a little bit more.
I never tried that.
Yeah, I'm kind of a purist with games usually. Like, any time that I'm allowed to customize my game, I usually don't bother. I'm just like, oh, well, you know, designers know best, and I'm going to enjoy it on its own terms, but maybe in this case, it's not really the right approach.
I never trust Sakurai to know best.
I'm enjoying Kid Icarus Uprising. He's all right with me in my book.
Oh, no, he makes good games, but he always gets something just like, what are you doing levels of just Sakurai-ness.
And briefly, I got like addicted to getting trophies, but then I saw that one achievement is getting 500, and I've got 300 somehow.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, after, what, like 50 hours? I'm not really...
That'll happen.
Yeah, I'm probably going to stop pretty soon.
Just go to the slot shooter game or whatever it is.
It's so boring.
It is boring.
I have one last thing that I've been playing, actually, that I wanted to quickly touch on. Kid Icarus 3D Classic.
You poor soul.
No, but it was, I don't know, like, it was pretty good, I thought. Like, I wanted to play that game for a long time, and I thought this would be the best way to go about it. But everything everyone has ever said about this game is true. Like, the reverse difficulty curve is really a bitch.
Yeah.
And the fact that you have to grind at the beginning to get hearts and to power up.
I think the first level of Kid Icarus is, like, one of the hardest levels in any game that I can remember playing. And I think I rarely ever got past it when I was a kid. After many, many attempts, and, you know, usually, and then once you do get past it, you're in that kind of dungeon area that makes no sense, and you're breaking pots in these randomized rooms, and the game might get a little bit easier, but it doesn't make any more sense, that's for sure.
No, but I did get past the first two stages that are so hard usually, and, you know, I spent so much time running around in the first labyrinth section. In the first forest section, that I was like, I was basically maxed out when I came out. So I went through the rest of the game really, really easily, and I kind of felt like I was robbed of the satisfaction of beating a hard game, because I, you know, like recently I went back and I played Castlevania on the NES and Ninja Gaiden, and those were really, really satisfying. Like the end boss was really, as Greg said once, like it was the climax of the game, and like, you know, once you beat those games, you feel so good about yourself. But in this case, I was up against Medusa, spoilers, and I just stood in front of her fire and I held down the button to fire, and she went down before I did, and that was it. It was an extremely
strategy right there.
Yeah, pretty much. It was extremely anticlimactic, and I didn't feel as good as I usually do beating these old school games that I thought I never would beat ever. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Mother Brain is very similar as a final boss for the original Metroid.
But you still get like these you know, little round things that are shot at you that do a lot of damage, and you still have to avoid those. So there's some sort of, it's more active.
There's more to it. You can't just stand there and mash the button, but it's very simple. And it's mostly a war of attrition. It's mostly, did you go in there with enough health and enough missiles? That's the main question of whether you're going to beat that boss.
Yeah. And right after you beat Mother Brain, then you have the escape sequence, which is very memorable. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's the best part of that game.
Yeah, and Kid Icarus doesn't have that. It's a shame.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying Kid Icarus needed a floating brain to escape from. Is what you're telling me.
Did you find that the backgrounds that they added for Kid Icarus, do they look good, and does the 3D actually work? Does it look nice?
I was surprised by how much I enjoyed the backgrounds, actually, because when I saw them in screenshots, I thought, wow, this is horrible. This is, I don't know, it was really odd looking, like really cheap. But then you see them in 3D, and you're not really looking at the background anyway, like you're looking at the action, so it's just really...
because you'll die.
Yeah, it adds some variety to the scenery, and like it perhaps gives you more context. Like you're in the game, you're literally climbing from the underworld to the Skyland or whatever, and like it perhaps gives you more of a feeling that you're making that progress.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool, because in the original game, you know, the backgrounds were completely black, so there was a lot of using your imagination and reading the manual to look at the concept art in there and kind of using that to flesh out your idea of what these characters really look like and what the worlds really look like. That was really common back in the early NES games.
Yeah, but in this case, like, it's more... Yeah, it provides context in a way, and there's only one instance where they kind of I don't know, there were these objects with wavy lines on them that really screwed with my vision and with the 3D on at the same time. Like, it was not very pleasant. I don't know how to describe it, but it felt really off. But that's really, in general, I enjoyed them.
Cool. All right. Well, that's going to wrap up new business. Now we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got your retroactive with Moto Heroes.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website, now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
This week we have a review of DSiWare's I Must Run! Declaratory by Alex Gulafi, which he points he's going to run away from this game because it's terrible. We also have a preview of the entirely bizarre DS Pokemon Conquest by Joss Max, which is the Nobunaga and Vision Pokemon crossover, which is just on the horizon.
We have a preview of Pokemon Black and White version 2 by Alex Calafi, and he says, if you want to know everything about the upcoming sequels, we have you covered. We also have a preview of New Super Mario Bros. 2 for 3DS by Andrew Brown. He says that pictures tell 1,000 coins.
Yeah, that's like a classic investigative preview where he just basically does like super detailed analysis of the screenshots,
yes,
which is a good way to do
that's,
it.
That's our new feature plan for previews.
Investigative journalism, people.
Mm.
All right, we also have a feature.
Feature?
Called iHeart 2D Games, written by Zach Miller. And he says, check out these 2D beauties on Nintendo platforms, past and present.
Cleavage, thankfully not cleavage.
No, when he says 2D beauties, he doesn't mean WayForward girls. He means actual beautiful 2D games.
It is a concern that needs to be addressed so people know it's
or
okay.
Or poorly endowed women.
They are 2Ds, John.
Awful. Next up, we have a feature called The Curious History of a Boy and His Blob on DS by Neil Ronahan. We dive into the mysterious cancellation of the 2005 DS version of A Boy and His Blob. I'd say probably not a mystery, that game sucks. We have a blog called Pedro Sees a 3DS for the Very First Time. This is a little different than the one JP did where he had eye surgery and he saw his 3DS in 3D for the first time. This is literally the first time Pedro has ever seen a 3DS system.
He writes for a Nintendo site.
Yeah, well, but he lives in Puerto Rico, and he doesn't get to travel very often. And it's hard to imagine now that we've owned one for a year, but if you go back to the very first time you ever saw a 3DS in person, it's kind of a big deal. So that's kind of Pedro, catching up with the world now, and finally getting to experience glasses-free 3D for the first time. And finally, we have an interview called Talking eShop with Renegade Kids' Jules Watcham by Neil Ronahan. And the Mutant Muds developer talks about Renegade Kid's upcoming games, the dismal state of retail games, and the possibility of Moon and Dementium sequels. Definitely a very good interview you'll want to check out. And you'll learn more about how the eShop works, too, which is very interesting and very exciting for the future of that platform.
They're actually going to combine those games, Dementium.
Dementium?
I have just ruined the segment. You're welcome.
All right, so yes, be sure to go and check out all of these great articles and even more by the time you hear this over at NintendoWorldReport.com. Welcome back to the show. It's time for Retroactive. This is the 22nd time we've done the Retroactive feature, and if you're new to the show, of course, the idea here is that we sort of choose a category and nominate a few games. We let the listeners vote and choose the game that we're going to play, and we all play it and talk about it together, and we also bring in some comments from the listeners who have also been playing the game. This time, we went with a WiiWare theme, and we actually kind of went with some more recent overlooked WiiWare games from the past couple of years. I know some people were wondering why we sort of went that way, and I think the best answer I can give is it felt like most of the really notable WiiWare games from earlier in the service we had already talked about a lot. So we've done Lost Winds, we've done World of Goo, we've done Cave Story, and a lot of those really good WiiWare games from the first two or three years of the service. So we've actually covered WiiWare extensively on this podcast over the past 5 or 6 years, but not as much in the past couple of years, mainly because the releases have slowed down a lot, the coverage has slowed down a lot, and you know, we've in a lot of cases just kind of moved on to other things. And so I thought, well, there's this kind of black zone, you know, where we're kind of overlooking things that have come out in the past couple of years. And Moto Heroes is probably one of the most notable examples of that. That's the one that the listeners picked, and that's what we played. This is, of course, a sort of racing slash platformer in 2D that is developed by Red Lynx, which is the same studio that made Trials HD and Trials Evolution, which just came out about a week ago.
And which broke records, right? It broke, like, most downloaded on first day or something.
Right, and Trials HD was the number one all-time selling Xbox Live Arcade game. So these guys have really struck gold over there. I have a feeling Moto Heroes did not do so well for them.
yeah.
Just guessing. So. Mm-hmm. That's partly the limitations of the platform, of course, with WiiWare. A lot of problems, as we know, with the way WiiWare is run and the way that it's marketed. And, you know, Moto Heroes is a game that, you know, I had not really played. There was a demo of it eventually that I did try out. But it's a game that, you know, got very good reviews, but ultimately it was $15, which meant it was one of the most expensive games on the service. And,
it came out a little too late, let's just say, because can we talk about how it was received, the announcement when, on
absolutely.
Your forums? Because I said, like, some people had never heard of it and I was just shocked. And I asked, what the hell are you guys doing with your Wiis? And, Neil answered, nothing, probably. and yeah, a lot of people, like, I don't know, like some guy said, you know, like I was probably playing games that were actually worthy of my time and money, which is just
yikes.
Like, ouch, Brood Wars.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty harsh.
Yeah, shots fired. Harsh.
But I mean, like, Red Lynx, like, they've got pedigree.
Not among Nintendo fans.
And this game has a terrible name.
It does.
Yeah, Moto Heroes is a crappy name for what I think is a pretty good game.
And I mean, it's got two sins. One, they slam two words together that don't really work well together. And two, they added a Z instead of an S.
Like, really, right. Like, honestly, the name to me says DS Shovelware.
No, it says DSi Shovelware.
It says Ubisoft Shovelware.
Oh, well, that don't get me started. Please,
and I mean, the thing is, too, like, on the Wii platform, we're so used to kind of, like, shovelware like that. Games like that will instantly just get dismissed.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Very, very poor choice for the platform. And ultimately, I think, you know, with WiiWare, a lot of the companies that have found a surprising amount of success on WiiWare have been companies that went with, like, really casual, kind of low-tier, almost app style things, or just very simple games that were, you know, really, really, really accessible and often got very bad reviews. But they, like, basically based on the name, it made sense to people who happened to be browsing through and said, oh, this thing has soccer in the name. You know, I mean, it like was that simple.
Yeah.
And maybe with Moto Heroes, they were trying to go for that. I don't know. But, you know, this is really not a very casual game. You know, I think some people in the forums commented that it's maybe a little more friendly, maybe a little more accessible than Trials. But it is a pretty hardcore game in terms of the difficulty, in terms of the nuance in which you have to play it in order to be good at it. You know, it's not a game where you can just jump in and slam on the button and win. Not at all. You really have to think about it. You have to understand the physics of the game. And maybe that leads to, you know, just a brief description. For those listeners who didn't play along with us or waiting to hear what we have to say about it before they check out the game, it looks very much like a 2D racing game, but there's ends up being kind of, I think, a lot of platforming elements to it.
Yeah, I would say if you're buying it to play a racing game, it's not a very good racing experience.
I mean, you rarely even race against other cars. You're racing against a ghost, usually.
Which many times just feels like, even though the other characters in the game don't have any personality at all, I would honestly, my socks have more personality than the quote villain of this game. I would rather race against them than a ghost. I mean, a ghost is just a ghost is literally has no substance whatsoever.
Yeah, I would compare it more almost to something like Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's a very good comparison.
That's what it reminded me of.
The level designs look kind of like Sonic stages, don't they?
Yeah, and there's a lot of loop-de-loops and stuff like that where you have to kind of properly go into a loop with the right, you know, timing.
Momentum is very important in the game.
It's fair to compare it at least a little bit to Excitebike. You know, I think the gameplay in terms of the leaning forward and backward and trying to come down on inclines in a certain way in order to maintain your speed is important, you know, in order to avoid crashing. That is very similar. But I think, you know, in defense of the ghosts in Moto Heroes, it's definitely not a very exciting kind of mechanic. And most of the levels in the story mode are you against a ghost, almost always. There's a few variations, but that's kind of the standard. And in defense of that, I think the ghost is really there. Number one, it's kind of a pace setter, right? Like it gives you an idea of, wow, you're really doing the stage way too slow, or you're doing it really fast. You're doing a great job. So that's kind of the primary use of it, I think, rather than just give you a time that you have to beat. Cause then you might be like, man, you know what? I'm not, you know, I don't understand. Am I going too slow on this part? Am I going too fast on this other part and crashing, or what's the deal here? So it kind of gives you a better idea of how to play the level. And that's kind of the other side of it is it's kind of a hint system if you think about it. Cause if nothing else, you can always watch what the ghost is doing and get a feel for, oh, that's how you can take that certain jump and land it in such a way that you don't lose all of your speed, mm-hmm. you know? So you can pay attention to it. And it gives you a lot of clues about maybe not the best way to play the level, but a way to play the level that might be better than the way you've been doing it yourself. And it's a kind of a guide to teach you how to play the game better. And then eventually you have to do even better than the ghost. And that's kind of the fun part is like, okay, even if you can match the ghost for every single maneuver and play the level just exactly as good as it is, that's not enough. You have to find some way to eke out just a little bit more performance and do it better. And that's really the challenge of the game. And it is very challenging sometimes. Very challenging. Some levels, I think the challenges are quite uneven in Moto Heroes because so a lot of levels I beat on my first try.
Yeah.
But then some of them I felt like I went through probably 25, 30 times before I finally got through it.
Yeah, I had the same experience.
Spiderwood.
Yeah, that was so annoying.
That's where I stopped playing the game originally.
Now, which one is Spiderwood?
That's the one where Spider, the villain, has coated himself in poison, and as soon as you touch him, then you're dead.
Oh, yes.
Yep.
Oh, yes. That one is rough.
It was maddening, and that's exactly the thing. I stopped playing it at that time. I eventually came back to it, but that was where I stopped, and I said, I've had enough. I am done with this game. Because it felt cheap. That was the problem.
I bought the game when it came out and took this game club before I had the courage to go back to that level. So
So that was a stopper for you.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember how I finally got past that level, but I think one of the very difficult things about it is that you don't have that ghost in that level. So you have to really learn how to play the level really, really efficiently without that guide and with a hell of a lot of pressure on you from this guy coming up behind you trying to tag you. Mm-hmm. Once he tags you, that's it. But there is a skip feature, and I noticed that in the forum thread, you know, some people were saying, man, this game really needs a skip feature. And I was like, wait, there is one. But I realized as I went back to the game, I realized why it's so easy to miss, because I think you have to fail a level a certain number of times before the skip feature becomes available. And here's the thing, if you reset with the minus button, which is probably how you'll do it most of the time, that doesn't count towards that number that you have to meet.
Yeah, that's the part that sucks. Because, I mean, you're gonna lose. You might as well just restart.
Not if you intend to skip it at some point. Yeah, so you either need to die, or which in some levels you can't die. In some you can, but there's not always like a pit of water that you can fall into. So sometimes you just have to make it to the end and hit the goal, even though you're way behind, there's no chance of you passing. It's worth your while sometimes just keep on and get to the end of the level, just because that gets you one step closer to the possibility of actually skipping. And that's not explained at all in the game, so it's very easy to miss if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that theme was like throughout the entire game. I felt like really nothing was explained to me. It was like, oh, well, you just go over here. Like, the worst one for me was the parachute, where they introduced the parachute.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, oh, yeah, just, you know, just open it up and float down and continue going on your way. It's like, it's not that simple at all.
Just float down, John. Just float down.
No, first off, the controls are totally wonky. You have no idea like how to guide yourself when you open up your parachute, and it doesn't tell you that you actually have to press, you know, A or 2 or whatever to actually close your parachute and then keep going. So I just felt like throughout the game, things were just completely unexplained most of the time.
You'll be fine. Just float. It'll be good.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, yeah, just do this and you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, Roy Koopa 64 in the forum thread said something about this. He said, wow, it's frustrating trying to figure out how to use the parachute when playing Paratrooper and Spiderwood in story mode.
Yeah.
I finally finished those two levels, but I still don't have a good method for falling down the shaft and opening the parachute correctly so I can swing over to safety.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way. When I finally beat that level, it felt like luck.
Yeah,
like I just happened to push the button at the right time and... You know, I did it 10 times, and one of the times I did it, it happened to work.
Yeah,
that's kind of how I felt.
I was never going to go back to it.
I ended up figuring it out, though, but it's counterintuitive, because you have to press left and right on the D-pad, except that, like, normally you would press right to make your car swing right, but it uses the same controls as when you're on land. So when you press right, you're tilting forward, and so what it does is push you to the left. And if you're going, yeah. And so if you're trying to swing from the parachute and you see your car is on the left side, you're going to press right to make it tilt the other way to go right. But you're doing the opposite. But you don't necessarily know that. So, yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I can't even wrap my head around that. I don't even know what you just said.
Basically, the controls are opposite of what you... They're counterintuitive when you have the parachute.
So what you do is that you swing left and right and then press A when, you know, at the right time during your swing. And then you can go on.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I got nothing.
That stage is probably a lot easier once you know that. But the game doesn't tell you that. And unfortunately... Now, that's a case where, you know, they put this level right before Spiderwood where you can kind of test it, but and I guess they intend for you to kind of figure it out through trial and error and learn how to use it before you have to use it in the race where the guy with the spider crap is trying to kill you. But because I made it through on blind luck through the first one, I ended up having to do the same thing in the second one too.
Yeah. Oh, because you didn't learn the lesson. Not that it's there to learn. It's not like it just hands it to you either. It's like, here's the lesson, but I'm going to give it to you in Aramaic.
Well, the problem is it is possible to get through it, and it's part of the kludginess of this being a physics-based game. There's a lot of cases in which you can probably finish the level in a way the designers never intended to, and that's exciting and that's fun, and I don't have a problem with that. Just in general, although I appreciate the sort of emergent gameplay that sometimes comes out of that, you know, it does feel sloppy. And I'm sure the physics model is consistent, but there are enough variables between you, sometimes the other racers, sometimes the items, sometimes moving objects in the levels that have their own physics that you don't really understand and aren't very realistic. And there's just a lot of stuff going on where it can feel like sometimes you did something correct and the game just kind of unfairly denied you success.
Yes.
Because of some weird log rolled in that you didn't even know was there. You know, there's a certain amount of just weird slush that comes from this being physics-based that can make it, in some cases, more fun and in some cases, really frustrating.
I found the physics stuff to be just a constant source of angst. I mean, something really dumb happened to me in one level where you have to knock down all these logs to uncover the finish line. It's in the first set. Like 4 times in a row, like a single stick, like a tiny stick rolled under my wheels and completely effed up the handling of the vehicle, and the ghost passed me because of it.
Is that the one where like I had a hard time hopping over them? Like sometimes I would get stuck on them and I couldn't hop over them. I would just restart the level.
This is ridiculous. I mean, at one point it was one little twig and I had a full second and a half lead on the ghost, but because of that twig, he beat me. It's like, I can't help this. There was nothing I could do to dodge it. I can't jump over it. I can't tilt my controller to get around it. I'm just stuck.
Yeah, that's what I felt. I felt like it was so punishing that if you made one mistake, you just restart.
And you don't even necessarily need to make a mistake. Sometimes the game just does it to you. It's just like...
Yep.
So I had one instance where it's one of those hollowed-out tree trunks where you go through it and it accelerates you, and it's like at like a 45-degree angle, so you get launched out like a cannon.
Yes.
I had one of those where, for whatever reason, I was going really fast, like faster than the game thought you should be going when I hit it. And it literally launched me all the way out and over past the end of the stage, and I died. It's like,
holy shit. You jumped funny. The flagpole.
I was what?
And I had the exact opposite where I had some speed going into it, but for some reason I hit something that snagged me along the way, And so I get into the log and I go all the way up to the top and I could actually see my tire coming out of the top, but then I lost steam and I just fell all the way down through the log and bottomed out. So I had to actually go all the way up so I could get enough steam to come back down and go through it and get launched
again. At which point you've already lost. Yeah.
Yeah, and by that time just restart.
Those random physics elements can be really a pain in the ass, but when the whole stage is static, I think that the physics work pretty well. And in a way, yeah, they kind of, like, every racing game is very memorization-based, right? Like, you have to learn the levels to do well in them. But in a lot of racing games, I find that that's where it stops. Like, once you know the tracks, you pretty much win all the time. Whereas here, like, yeah, the execution is you have to pay a little bit more attention. And I find that that could potentially enhance the replay value. But then you have those logs that roll around that are entirely unpredictable that kind of screw everything up.
And undodgeable, too.
Well, that's where the platforming comes in, right? That's, you know, there's that exploratory element where, you know like you said, once you figure out the course and, you know, in a normal, you know, racing game, your focus then shifts to just incrementally improving your performance on the course. But with this, you can actually open up, you know, kind of open up whole new paths for yourself by just learning how to get to different places.
Because the like, it's so hard to climb a slope without momentum, and because the moon, like the game has moon physics where you really have to be careful not to be too long in the air. There's a lot of shortcuts that are simply trying to go not too fast so that you can stay on the ground, or try to gain enough momentum to jump over a couple of hills. And offers a lot of freedom that way.
Which was a big deal in like Excitebike 64, you know, where if you boosted just perfectly and you got the little extra boost when you come right off the lip of the jump, you know, the little Miyamoto touch there where you tap the button again and it goes vroom. If you do that just right in just the right places, you can strategically jump over entire sections of track that everyone else is going to have to navigate. And you can save tons of time that way. And that becomes really key in Excitebike 64. And I got that feeling a lot for Moto Heroes. It doesn't have any kind of boost system, really. But just the feeling of if you manage the physics, if you really understand how momentum works and how the handling of this vehicle is, and if you really lean into or out of the jumps at just the right way, you can really take advantage of these levels. And I think the levels are deliberately designed in order to give you those opportunities. And, you know, you kind of have to be an advanced player. It doesn't always work. You know, sometimes you kind of overcorrect in the tilting and you don't quite get it. And then you can pay the price. But if you do it just right, it feels awesome. And that's one thing I do want to stress is that, you know, for all the complaints that we have about the physics, and I think they're mainly a problem in the levels where the designers just kind of got a little too clever with all the different like features that they could put into the levels, you know, where you've got elevators and all these Rube Goldberg machines that swing platforms around and dump logs in order to activate a switch and explode a gas tank in order to shoot you across a big gap. There's so many ways for that to go wrong, and very often it does go wrong because the game just doesn't, it's not tight enough that, you know, and the levels aren't designed tightly enough that it actually works every time. But in just the straight ahead, like, you know, racing and jumping hills and making tight landings and stuff like that, I think it can be really fun when it works. You know, when they keep the levels kind of simple and they make it about you playing the game well, it is really satisfying when you do it correctly. And I think because of the physics model being what it is, when you do things like, you know, go through a little tunnel and you get boosted out the other side and you go into this huge jump, it feels really fun, you know, like, cause there is a very much a weight to your vehicle. And so when you get a lot of air, it's exhilarating, but at the same time, it's like, oh shit, I have to make this landing now.
Yeah.
And it puts this pressure on you as well. And I think there's a lot of fun to be had there, and that was when I had the most fun with the game.
To me, the landing part, though, once I got a grip on it, which maybe took half an hour, the only time it was ever even a thought was when I was going to land on a bridge, and I realized, oh, all my momentum is about to be just destroyed.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the bridge will bounce you up.
Yeah, which is kind of annoying. But I mean, in general, like once I got that down, I was like, This isn't really the challenge anymore. I want something else, if that makes sense.
It is a simple game, you know. Yeah. If you strip out the wonky levels that have too many moving parts, then what you have left is really a very, very simple kind of gameplay. And that's more what you have in Trials. I had never played Trials before, but I was very curious after playing a bunch of Moto Heroes. And so this week I downloaded the demo, at least, for Trials Evolution, which is beginning rave reviews, and people are totally obsessed with it, and people really love it. And it is extremely similar to Moto Heroes, but it's different in a few key ways. I'd say it's more challenging overall because you're not this kind of a bobblehead in a car that can never become detached. It's more like you do have this kind of guy who's on a bike and he can fall off and he can just, you can take a turn too hard and he just dies. Like his head will snap. They have these really funny, like, ragdoll physics. And if you do something that's a little too harsh, your guy just dies and you have to start over. Whereas in Moto Heroes, if you land in a really funky way, if you land upside down or something, you just shake the remote and you flip over. Like you might be out of the race at that point, but you can keep going if you want. You know, you can never really die unless you just fall off the stage. So I think Moto Heroes is more forgiving in that sense, for sure.
There are a couple of missions where you carry a basket around and you've got this really creepy doll inside that you're not supposed to drop.
Yes.
That's really, I don't know, like it creeped me out, but it was pretty funny at the same time.
Yeah, and Trials does feel a little bit more like those levels, and that you do have this feeling that you're trying to balance more. But at the same time, Trials is also, at least based on the demo, maybe the full game gets way crazier, but to me it felt like less of a platformer and more of a racing game, primarily because it feels like in Trials you're always going forward. Now some, you still do loop-de-loops and stuff like that, but it's more about going forward, and it puts more emphasis on just leaning. The lean becomes extremely important, even for like the most simple ramp, the most simple jump that you could possibly do. Even just going up a hill is really challenging because you have to manage the lean so much more. Whereas in Moto Heroes, it feels like a lot of that stuff is more automated. And again, just because there's so little penalty if you screw it up, you know, then there's not as much pressure on you. And where Moto Heroes differs is it feels much more like a platformer, primarily because if you think about it, you go backwards a lot in Moto Heroes. You have a lot of situations in which you might have to go forward and back and then forward and back in order to get to the goal.
Yes.
So they construct these elaborate stages that require you to, you know, do all kinds of ramps. Sometimes you go over ramp backwards in reverse to get enough speed in order to get up to a higher place where then you can go forward again. And it feels much more like you're kind of exploring these levels, and it's much more of a two-dimensional game. Whereas I would say Trials, from what I play, is much more of a one-dimensional game. You just go forward. It is just that. You just go forward. And it feels much more simple, but at the same time, that allows them to focus on the physics more and in teaching you how to control your character. In Moto Heroes, it feels like that stuff is not as emphasized, and they're more concerned about you learning to manage your momentum and use it to get places, you know. And there's a lot of secret stuff in Moto Heroes too. I mean, it's very much a platformer in that sense.
Yeah, I was going to mention, like, you said it was more exploratory. And yeah, like, there's a ton of secrets that you really have to look hard for them. Like, have you guys found two spirits for all of the 75 stages? Because I certainly didn't. I found like 50 out of 150, and I was looking for them. It's crazy.
Yeah, they're very well hidden, and a lot of times, even if they're in plain sight, you're like, how the hell do I get there?
Yeah. You know?
And that's fun. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I really like that. I mean, just it gives you something extra to do that's actually meaningful, in the sense that it's not just collecting. You actually have to figure something out. It's like a puzzle that you have to solve on top of everything else. So I like that a lot.
It made me think of Beetle Adventure Racing, you know, or even there's a little bit of it in Diddy Kong Racing, just a very little bit at the beginning. But certainly in Beetle Adventure Racing, there were these, you know, crazy bonus boxes that were placed in these ludicrous places in the levels. And if you got it, it didn't really matter if you won the race. Like that was the puzzle. That was one of the great accomplishments in the game, is you figured out what series of shortcuts and bizarre hidden tunnels to go through in order to get up there. And you were richly rewarded for it. And I feel Moto Heroes, I don't know if you're richly rewarded, but the fun part is, if you're going for the blue spirits, you're literally not racing anymore. Mm-hmm. It is just a platformer. Because it doesn't matter if you win the race. If you get that thing, you got it. And that is, it can be really fun. And in that case, it really, really literally is a vehicular platformer. And I think as a platformer goes, there's a lot to like here. If you're not rushed by the clock, you know, if you don't care about beating the ghost, if you don't care about getting away from the poison car, then you can take the game at a more leisurely pace and you can think about how are you going to set up this jump, you know, and to me, the game works better there. And the physics are not as annoying because there's so much less pressure on you.
Sure.
It's almost Blaster Master-ish in a way, you know, not in, you know,
actually, yeah, when I first started playing this, I thought this feels like controlling the tank in Blaster Master if it was drunk.
Yeah, it's very true. Because
it's leaning all over the place and it's flipping and you're going loop to loops and it's just crazy, you know?
There's a ski slope stage that I actually found was enjoyable, although it's over very quickly. Where you're basically, the objective is just to jump as far as you can at the bottom of the slope. And but the actual level itself is just like, whatever.
It's just a ramp.
I race to the bottom, and there I am. But if you play that in the online play, at least you can race against your time. I mean, but still, it's just a ramp.
You've got the two things to collect. You've got the blue spheres, which basically you just touch them and you gain them forever, and you don't even have to complete the race. Like you've got them. But then you've got the coins that kind of show you perhaps the path that you're supposed to take, and then you have to collect all of them in one go. If you want to improve your score, basically, like if you collect 15, it doesn't matter which 15 you get. The next time, if there's a total of 30, then you have to collect, more than 15 to make any gain there.
Do you have to actually win the race in order for those to count?
I don't know, but I suspect you do. And there's a lot of stages that made me like scratch my head until I realized that there were like more secrets than I thought there were originally in the game, because like sometimes you'll finish a race, you think you've collected everything, but you've got like 30 coins out of 80, and you're just like, where the hell are those 50 other coins? Like, do I come back here again? Like, what's going on? And it turns out
There's some weird shortcut underwater that launches you up into the sky and you fly around with a helicopter blade in order to collect the rest of the coins. I found that on a level.
Yeah, and there's one level where you're supposed to find that, but there are that is present in a lot of levels, and you never suspect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is awesome. You know, I love that they pack so many secrets in here. A lot of shortcuts, a lot of secrets, a lot of just really crazy stuff that you can try to get to, and I like that very much. But certainly, as a racing game, it's, to me, that's where it breaks down a little bit. If this was just about finding things, I think the game would be more fun. And, you know, once you beat the races, you can kind of ignore the racing part of it, right? If once you've unlocked all the levels, you can always go back and explore these levels to your heart's desire. And I think there's a lot of fun to be had there, but that's almost like the post game, you know, that's kind of where things really open up and you can just explore at your own pace. As a racing game, which is kind of how it starts out, which is sort of the way that it presents itself to you, and that's the way that you progress through the 75 levels, that part can be really frustrating, you know, for some of the reasons that we mentioned. Now, the online play is interesting because it's based on a league mode where a little bit like the communities in Mario Kart 7, where you just kind of create a league and then you get a little code for it. You can post that on a message board or whatever. Again, this is a case of Nintendo sort of farming out their online features to the real internet and letting people make it work despite the system's limitations. Mm-hmm. And it seems to work really well. I mean, you know, once you get the code, you just stick it in there. There's no friend codes. You don't have to match up one-on-one or anything like that. But it also means that it's asynchronous, so you're really just going in there and doing time trials, which is weird because if you've been playing the story mode for a while, the story mode is kind of this long series of time trials. So you go online, and you're really kind of doing exactly the same thing, you know, and you're just setting a time that then you can compare to the other people, which led me to wonder, why can't the whole game just be this? You know, why can't you just have a leaderboard for every single level? And why do I have to go to a different mode and play the same level that I've already beaten in single player, but now it counts because I'm in the online mode? You know, I don't really get that. It seems to me that it could have been integrated a lot better with the story mode, which is really the game. I mean, the online is not very impressive to me. I mean, I was in it last night And I think there were about eight events that I could choose from, but actually like four of them were closed for whatever reason. I don't know what that means, but there were like four, about half the events that I could select from, it wouldn't actually allow me to participate in them. I was like, okay, what the hell is this? What is going on here?
Yeah, like, it
what
seems like events time out or something.
Yeah, they do.
And they don't count, I guess?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what... Yeah, it seemed to have been the vision of Redlings for the multiplayer. Like, they want you to play the game every day, which is a... Yeah.
That's cute.
I don't know why they designed it that way, but... Yeah, so you've got at any time you've only got four events opened, and you've got a timer saying like showing you how much time left you have to complete an event, and the better you do on an event, the more points you get, and those points add up, and every day that you don't play, you lose 10% of your total. So they really like that was definitely the goal. They want you to play every day, otherwise, and that makes it really weird. Like when you're trying to compare your scores to your friends, like you can't really, because you can't go back and check how well you did in a past event that's now closed. Really, the only thing that you can compare is your current score, and probably the person who's played the game the most is going to have the better score.
It rewards somebody who's just sitting there willing to grind.
Yeah, someone who never gives up.
Yep.
Well, you would still have to be skillful at it. I mean, you'd still have to set good times and everything and get, you know, perform better than the other people. But yeah, I've never seen an online mode set up like this. It makes no sense. It doesn't explain anything, of course, just like the rest of the game. It really doesn't explain anything about what's going on when you go in there. And I just didn't see the point of it. You know, I was like, why would I come back to this online mode? What is the motivation here? It's just bizarre. There's very little to do, and when I do it, basically it says this is all completely transient. You know, if you come back in a week, your the scores that you've set will be gone, and the points that you've accumulated will have withered away due to this weird 10% thing, and it'll be as if you had never even gone into this mode. And it's just the strangest thing. I don't get it. I mean, maybe instead of worrying about, you know, trying to motivate their players to come back and play it every single day, they should have focused more on getting people to just play it at all, period, for the first time, you know, and make a great online mode that is addictive, that makes me want to come back to it, and I will come back to it every day. Yeah. Don't set up your scoring system to be punitive and hope that guilts me into coming back every day, because I will say, fuck you, and not come back to it at all.
And it just seems like it's the kind of game where, you know, I mean, the only games where I've seen that, you know, actually work with, you know, something that you have to come back every day to is, you know, MMOs, where people generally just play them every day just out of habit, right? Or games that develop really, really big cult sort of audiences, you know, like first-person shooters or something like that, where people want to come back and challenge and play other people over and over and over again so they get, you know, they get points or whatever. This is not that type of game. It's the kind of game where, you know, you kind of pop on, you know, maybe play every once in a while. It's just not that kind of game. And like Johnny said, I mean, it's so punitive. Like, it just makes you say, what's the point of this? Because if I stop playing this game for a week, I'm not going to have any points. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is the kind of game where it could be really successful online. If you're setting times on the courses and you see the time that your friend got, you say, I feel like I could probably, you know, that's only like 1 second more than me. I could probably go back and do that a little bit better.
Yeah.
And if it constantly updated you with that and it gave you this kind of situational awareness of what your friends are doing in the game and where you might be able to challenge them, and then you can have that go back and forth. And the funny thing is, that's exactly what Trials does. Mm-hmm. So this developer has experience with that, and surely they must have realized that was a good way to do it. And maybe this is a case of them saying, you know, we can't do that kind of system on a Wii game. It doesn't have the infrastructure to do that. So maybe that's why this is all in a separate mode, but it is mind-boggling. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And, you know, I will go back to this game and do more of the platforming stuff because I think that's fun, but I'm not going back to the online mode. There's just no point.
No, it's not really even an online mode, to be honest. It's just score swaps.
Right. It's leaderboards, but it's you have to go into a special mode and play on special stages to even get on the leaderboard, Whereas they really should have just been able to integrate leaderboards into the entire game that you were playing anyway.
I've got a theory as to why they wanted you to come back every day like this. And it's that the fact that not that long after the WiiWare version came out, it came out on iOS.
Oh. Mm.
But yeah, like so like a lot of iOS games are like that. Like you're meant to play a little bit every day and everything. So it makes more sense on that platform. And the way that the scores are done, I suppose, make more sense also on that platform than it does on WiiWare.
See, yeah. I was thinking more like they're going to try to sell you real money for coins so you can buy a better vehicle in the cash shop.
Oh, well, that's another thing that's strange in this game. Like you earn coins by playing through the single player game to buy new cars. You can't use your new cars in the single-player game. You can only use them in the multiplayer mode where you can't get coins. It's completely backwards.
And do the orbs actually do any good except unlocking those incredibly unfunny family tree briefs?
You used the spirits to skip levels.
Oh, okay. Because right now, primarily what I've seen them for is that family tree at the end, which is monumentally unfunny.
No, I think really the only point of the family tree is to show you which levels you still have to collect the spirits.
I get that. It's like a big, right now it's a big fresco of failed comedy.
Yeah, unfortunately the writing in Moto Heroes leaves something to be desired.
It's just like, look at all these terrible jokes they've put on one screen.
Well, what do you mean? Like you didn't like the joke where a caveman discovered fire by farting next to a spark? Like that's comedy gold.
I wanted to set myself on fire. Yes.
That's actually more imaginative than most of the banter that you get before stages, which by the way, you should never have to read more than once. I don't understand why when you restart a level it makes you page through dialogue again.
Yep.
What a waste of time.
No, it does say that if you press one instead of two, then it's going to skip it.
Right.
And when you restart that level, it doesn't come back.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, it does.
Good to know.
But I mean, it's...
Pro tip.
Yeah, you didn't have that explained to you, Johnny?
Yeah, seriously. If a single joke in the game were funny, I'd be amazed. But right now, I'm in the second area, and we are still 0 for whatever.
Yeah, but you know we've sat here, we've criticized this game quite a bit, but there's something about it.
I keep going if you want. I got more.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, though. You know, and I felt that way. Like, there were times when I just wanted to just throw my controller at the wall. This game frustrated me so much. But it's like what it does well, it does really well. But what it does poorly, it does really poorly.
Yes.
You know, I can't say don't buy this game. It's a piece of crap because it's not.
It's not an abomination. It isn't.
It's absolutely not.
I've had a lot of fun with it. I really have.
See,
I haven't, though.
I mean, I've just felt like...
Well, James, you're also very early, and one of the good things about the story mode, which is really just the game, one of the good things about the game is that it does continually kind of feed you new elements and new experiences. And some of the later levels, you do some really fun stuff that you would not see at all in the earlier levels.
Yeah,
and so
it
does every now and then. You'll kind of hit this point where it'll give you a new kind of level, and you'll be like, "Oh, that's really fun! I want to keep going." And you'll play 20 more levels without even thinking about it.
Yeah, you kind of have to stick with it because you actually the more that you adjust to the way your car controls, the better things get. I mean, obviously, you improve as a player. But you kind of have to. There's a learning curve that I didn't anticipate that there would be,
right?
And once I kind of got over that, then things kind of started to click in. But that took a long time, and I can completely see why people just quit on the game entirely.
Absolutely, yeah. And that Spiderwood level comes way too early in the game.
Yeah,
and it is fucking ridiculously hard.
Yeah,
there's no doubt. But again, you can skip it. Collect a couple of spirits, which you probably did accidentally up to that point. And just, you know, skip the level and move on. Because the next level is not nearly that hard, I promise.
I don't know what I really wanted out of that game. I think I just wanted a bit more racing, you know? Like, I really wanted to feel like this game has racing in it. Like, I feel like too much of the racing DNA is sacrificed for the platforming DNA. Or the physics engine. It doesn't... Even when there are real legitimate opponents on the track, it doesn't feel like a racing game.
Yeah. No, it feels like total chaos in those. It feels like a Mario Party mini game. Everybody's just kind of tripping over each other.
The first time they have all four opposing racers on the track together, including the fourth one they don't even introduce for a little while. He's just there all of a sudden.
That's just a mess.
And that same level's the one where they introduce the bug item. It's just fucking pure chaos.
The bug item, which, what does that do?
It just randomly flies out and picks somebody up and then drops
them. That's what I thought it did, but again, the game doesn't confirm that or tell you anything about it.
No, and
actually, I don't even think that item is even introduced, is it?
No, it's not. And
they're just sitting there.
And what's funny is there's a billion of them in that stage. And and one time I got it, and I was in the lead, and I fired it, and it picked up the person behind me, and it dropped him on top of that that first finish line that comes early that's almost impossible to land on. It just dropped him on it. It literally gave him the win of the game, just because. I was like, go to hell, stupid
I didn't
game.
Really know what was going on the first time I played that, because I had no idea if those things were good for me or bad for me. Yeah. Because what would happen is
they don't look like weapons.
Yeah, and they would actually impede my progress because they would drop somebody in front of me. So I didn't know what the hell was going on.
But the fact is there's so many on the stage. It's just like a fucking swarm of bugs. Like it's one of the years when all the locusts come out of the ground. And it's just like, I don't know which one's mine, which one's theirs. Did I just pick myself up? Did they pick me up? Why did I get dropped on the ground? What's going on?
And those battle royale levels, I think, are kind of hilarious. I mean, they're a complete chaos mess, but they're also kind of funny. And they're not that hard to win, you know. Yeah. So I don't think they're going to be game stoppers for you or anything. They're not the best. They're not like the highlight of the game by any means. But they are kind of hilariously stupid.
Like I just wish there was something more competitive going on than that, because it really feels like the only reason I won that stage was I got lucky and just happened to hit the finish line by accident on that one that's inside the wheel.
Hmm. Yeah, like I felt like if they, you know, and that's actually something more of what I expected out of the online mode. I figured, oh, well, you'll be able to get four players and, you know, it could potentially be hilarious. You know, you could, like, you know, if you could, you know, throw bugs at other players and completely screw them over, you know, and pick them up and put them back behind you and stuff like that. Like, like when you play the game, you see like, wow, this is a really cool concept. It's just not executed that well.
And the local multiplayer is like that. It is all the cars on the track at the same time.
Okay. Yeah.
And you're all kind of, you know, falling all over each other, using weapons on each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can see that it's not going to be the new Smash Brothers or the new Mario Kart, but I can see that being kind of fun to have some people over. Because it then again, and I know some people in the forums kind of mentioned this, but, like, if you aren't already familiar with how these vehicles handle in the game, if you haven't played the single player, I'm not sure that you're really going to be able to compete at all in the multiplayer. So, like, whoever owns the game and has been playing it is just going to totally dominate.
It feels like you're riding a Hoover vacuum. Mm-hmm. it's just like, I don't know what's going on here. Why am I... Oh, it's bizarre. I mean, and really, it just takes time to get used to. And not because it's, like, some great, crafty, super precise control mechanism. Just because it's bad.
I don't think it's bad. It's very loose. Very loose.
You almost have to learn how your vehicle reacts when certain things are placed around you in the environment. You know, it's just weird. You have to, like, it took me a while to kind of, like, poke at my vehicle to figure out, oh, okay, well, when I see this coming up, I should probably time it right and you know, pull back here. And, you know, when there's something in front of me, I should tilt it this way so that I land that way so that I'm prepared for this up ahead. There's a lot of that. Like, it's a lot of trial and error, so.
Boy, yeah, I'm glad that we had such charged opinions about Moto Heroes, and
because your listeners certainly didn't.
No.
Yeah. No, we didn't have,
they had incredibly unenthused.
Oh, there
opinions.
Are listeners now. Oh, all right, I see how it is.
We didn't have a lot of participation in this retroactive, which always makes me sad, especially since we had in the Fire Emblem, we had spectacular participation for the last one. But, you know, I understand it is an expensive WiiWare game, and I think ultimately this game was overpriced. You know,
and I think so,
bet you the developers would have preferred for this to be released at a lower price. And Nintendo said, oh, this is like one of the most content packed WiiWare games we've ever seen. We're definitely going to put this at 1500 points. And it is, there's 75 levels in the game, and all of them have at least two secret things that you're probably going to have to go back and find. And it has an online mode. I mean, there's a lot of content here, no doubt about it. And the presentation is good. I don't think it's fantastic, but it's good enough. And I do think it is probably one of the meatiest WiiWare games. But when you compare it to, like, look, freaking Trials Evolution came out this week on Xbox Live Arcade for the exact same price as Moto Heroes.
Yeah.
And there is no doubt it is a higher quality product, and it has a lot more going on. The online integration is exactly what I would want from this kind of game, where it has leaderboards on every single track, and it's just, there's just a lot more to it, you know. And I think it's a shame that these games cost exactly the same thing from the same developer with very similar gameplay, and one is clearly just better than the other and they cost the same. It's stupid, you know. I mean, this is a classic issue of Nintendo just not paying attention to the market realities and overvaluing what some of these games really, really should be. Because I think at $10, this game probably would have sold a lot better, and it certainly would be a lot easier to recommend. Yeah. As it is at 1,500 points, it's one of the most expensive games on the platform, and it's such a weird game that's hard to come to grips with that, although I enjoyed it a lot, it's not a game that I can go out and just easily recommend to people and say, oh, you should definitely play Moto Heroes, because you may hate it. I mean, it's quite possible.
Well, I can tell you that when I first when I first started to play, and I was like, wow, this game's $15. This thing had better be a hidden gem. This thing had better be really good. And I started to play it, and I'm battling against controls. And the most interesting email is the one that I didn't send out to RFN, which was, I can't believe we picked this fucking game and I wasted $15 on it. Fuck you guys. That was what I wanted to send, but I said, okay, well, I paid $15 for this. I'm pot committed at this point. I'm sticking with it. And after that,
Have you paying money for a game meant you're committed to it?
Well, that's the thing. You see, this game's already out of the plastic, so I got to play it, right?
There is no plastic.
That's right. There is no plastic, so I have to play it.
Well, I'm really glad you stuck with it, John. And I think, James, this game would grow on you too if you played more of it. But it is not very easy to get into, and it definitely takes a while to sink its hooks into. Last night, it kind of finally clicked with me. I was right about the halfway point in the story mode, and I was having a good time with it up till then, and then I got stuck on this one race because they give you a new truck that is, I would say, more difficult to control. It's faster. It has more acceleration, which means you have less time to react when you're in the air and when you go up a hill. And I was just having a really hard time coming to grips with it. And they gave me one of the more difficult races to beat the ghost on. Like, you have to play that level really perfectly to beat the ghost. And I was so frustrated with it. And I just kept on and kept on. I finally powered through it. And then I played like 30 more levels in a row. I sat there for like an hour and a half just glued to it, and I thought, this is really fun.
Like I said, when I stuck with it and actually, you know, I guess what I didn't expect is to have to actually develop skill in order to play this game. Like I didn't realize that I would actually have to sit there and learn and, you know, figure it out, and the game just wouldn't hand it to me. You know? So that's one of the things I really liked about it, was the fact that, like, it actually does challenge you to learn its controls.
Before I mustered up the courage to try Spiderwood again after all these months, I went back and played some of the earlier tracks because I wasn't sure that I would remember how to play the game, like how certain power-ups worked and all of that stuff. And I ended up getting gold medals for pretty much every track that I was playing. So I had retained the skills to play the game, and also like the stuff that seemed impossible before became suddenly much easier.
Well, I certainly, you know, if you've played Trials on Xbox, I think this game is definitely worth checking out. It's different enough that you might find that it's a good compliment, and I think you'll probably be able to adjust to it pretty quickly. I think if you're a really big fan of Excitebike, Excitebike 64, Excite Truck, Excite Bots, there's plenty of DNA shared in Moto Heroes in terms of controlling the angle of your vehicle in the air and learning to match the slope when you come down and basically mastering the physics and mastering the momentum of your vehicle to win a race.
Yeah, I just feel like it's a bit more straightforward in those games than it is in this one. It may be because of just how the control mechanism for doing it. I mean, in Excite Trucks and Excite Bots, being able to see what's coming from essentially the head-on perspective helps a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just makes a difference.
I agree. I think the camera angle in Moto Heroes is not ideal. I think it's necessary for it to have the kind of platforming that it has, but in terms of just controlling the vehicle, it's not ideal. And I think the game would probably play better with some kind of either analog joystick or really precise tilt control. because I think doing this lean forward and back with the D-pad is just not responsive enough, and it's hard to tell if you've leaned far enough. All right, well, we're going to wrap up then the retroactive, and who knows, if we get a lot of sort of last-minute comments, maybe we'll come back next week and read a few more. I do thank the people who did participate, and I hope the game was rewarding for you. And, you know, I hope we've at least convinced a few people to at least check out the demo and maybe get a feel for some of the physics things that we're talking about and, you know, start to get a grip on the feel of the trucks. And if you like it, you should try the game. It's a good game. If you don't like it, then yeah, just move on.
Yeah, just don't.
I enjoyed Moto Heroes, and I'm glad I played it, and I do plan to go back and play some more of it. And I am definitely also going to pick up Trials Evolution, because that was awesome, the part that I played. It's also just a lot more gleeful and stupid and giddy than Moto Heroes, which, but strangely enough, seems to take itself seriously relative to Trials.
It seems to take itself seriously and then not. It's like,
yeah, it's the cartoony presentation, and yet,
yeah,
and yet the game is not that wacky.
I mean, all your characters are weebles, for God's sake.
And I'm pretty glad that you guys gave me the opportunity to revisit it, because I don't think I would have on my own, and I definitely have a better opinion of it than back when I originally gave up on it.
Good. Yeah. Well, we definitely appreciate you going back and playing more of the game, Guillaume, so that you could participate on Retroactive. It's very, very kind of you to put that investment into it. So thanks a lot. And thanks to all the other listeners who played along as well. And thanks to everybody who voted. And of course, we will come back with more Retroactive in a few weeks. And it'll be a totally different category, totally different kinds of games in there. And I don't know what it'll be yet, but it's always a good way to try a game that you might not have played otherwise. So we'll be announcing the next Retroactive in a few weeks. But until then, you can send in your listener mail. We will have more of that next week, I'm sure. And the address for that is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also interact with us on the forums and the talkback for this episode. Just go to the website and click on the comments there, and we read those. We post in those all the time. It's a really good way to keep up on the show. You can also keep up with the show by joining us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/radiofreenintendo. It's a good way to hear about things sort of midweek between when the articles go up. And we're always posting all kinds of links and stuff like that, reminders about Retroactive and other things. So it's a very good resource. And we're on Twitter as well. Guillaume, you're on Twitter, right?
I sure am. Pandarius Rex. I'm not even sure how to pronounce it myself. Panda R-E-U-S Rex.
And John, you are Mr. Diamond J,
yep,
correct?
Yep, M-R, Diamond, letter J.
And James, you are NWR_James.
Yes.
Excellent. And I am Johnny Metz, J-O-N-N-Y, M as in Mary, E-T-T-S.
Well, aren't you so good that you get your full name?
Yeah, well, not my full name, but reasonably close. And I probably tweet the most out of all of us. And I try to retweet funny things from the other guys, too, when they hop on there. So we will be back next week with Greg and more crazy RFN goodness. And look forward to talking at you then. And Guillaume, thanks again for being our guest. We will talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Visit negativeworld.org. Listen to the podcast.
There you go. Do it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being here. All right, we'll see you all next week right here on Radio Free Nintendo.
Draft night.
Later.
Draft.
Bye. Draft.